Welcome to Few and Far Between, conversations about rare disease research. I'm your host, Chris O'Brien. I'm here today with Becky Nokomis, SVP of Commercial Operations at BioRossi. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Chris. It's good to be here.
Great to have you. In today's episode, Becky's going to talk with Amy Fenton Parker, President and CEO of the Batten Disease Support and Research Association, BDSRA. Batten's disease is a rare disease caused by autosomal recessive genetic mutations, and it affects 2 to 4 births per 100,000 people in the United States. It results in progressive neurological impairment, seizures, and gradual vision and speech loss. A really tough one. So, Becky, tell us a little bit about your conversation about Batten's disease with Amy.
I'm happy to do that. It's, again, like with so many of our guests on this podcast series, I learned a lot from Amy Fenton Parker about Batten disease and its impact on families and their children. Amy has been with BDSRA for over a year now, supporting Batten patients and their families, funding research and treatment for this rare disease, and advocating for action in the community and around the country. She is an experienced nonprofit leader skilled in relationship building, media relations, fundraising, and grant management. She is also on the advisory board at Hope Hollow, which is an Ohio-based organization that provides support such as lodging and transportation for cancer patients and their loved ones. So needless to say, she is a very busy woman. So I'm really grateful that she took the time to talk to us.
Yeah, just another underachiever on the podcast.
Exactly.
It sounds like she's quite a beacon of hope for Batten's disease. I'm so impressed with the people that we've met who are active in advocacy on rare diseases because they have to cover so many different skill sets in order to make this stuff happen. So how did your conversation with Amy go?
It was very eye-opening. Needless to say, I had not heard much about Batten disease prior to talking with Amy. So she refers to Batten's as the silent killer, and there are over 13 different types of this disease. So
wow.
You can imagine how critical research and communication is for the parents of children suffering from this illness. It's horrible. In addition to an in-depth discussion around Batten's, we also talked about the importance of sharing the latest updates and information relating to Batten disease. Also, it was interesting to hear Amy talk about storytelling and the need to share the hopes and challenges of these families with the rare disease community, also with clinical trials industry and just educating the world about this disease. So she's very passionate. Again, it was a pleasure talking with her, and it was, I learned a lot from her.
Yeah, it sounds like there are lessons here for folks who are interested in rare disease, kind of no matter where they are.
Exactly.
Thanks, Becky. Really looking forward to this one. Let's jump into it.
Okay. Everyone, and welcome to episode 17 of our Few and Far Between podcast series. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Amy Fenton Parker. Amy is an experienced nonprofit leader with a career in development, nonprofit management, and marketing. She is skilled in relationship building, media relations, fundraising, sales, grant management, and change management. So as you can imagine, she is a very busy lady. Right now, Amy is serving as an advisory board member to an organization called Hope Hollow. Hope Hollow provides lodging, meals, transportation assistance, and emotional support at no cost to cancer patients and their loved ones who are financially in need while coming to Columbus, Ohio for their cancer treatment. She is also CEO of Batten Disease Support and Research Association, lovingly known as BDSRA, and Batten's mission is to support Batten families, fund and facilitate research for treatment and a cure, and advocate for action. So, thank you, Amy, for joining us, and welcome to our podcast series.
Thank you so much for having me. We're excited to talk about Batten disease.
In my reading around Batten disease, it's been very educational, but before we go through talking more about the disease, I wanted to hear a little more about your journey. Can you tell us about your experience and some of your experiences in the nonprofit sector, and then how you came to find out about BDSRA?
Yes. So I started the first third to a half of my career in marketing and advertising. And my last professional career in that field was working as a bank marketing director for a community bank. And we were very involved in the community, as you would imagine. And it was through that nonprofit work that I really discovered my love for nonprofit. We decided as a family that we needed to move to the Columbus area. I was looking and reviewing and reflecting on what I wanted to do moving forward. And through that discernment process, really realized that I was in love with the nonprofit world and wanted to get more involved in it. And the Dominican Sisters of Now Peace took a chance on me, and I entered this wonderful world of development. From there, I moved on.
That's fantastic. It's amazing how our lives go in these, you know, it's never what we think it's going to end up being. That's
well,
fantastic.
I always say marketing is about storytelling. And in order for donors to be motivated to give to an organization, they have to know your story. So it's transferable skills and storytelling.
We're so glad because it led you here. So that is wonderful. So tell us a little bit about why BDSRA was of interest to you. And tell us a little bit about this journey.
Okay. Well, in 2020, I fell victim to COVID. And so my career journey was taking another turn. And I was really reflecting, what do I want to do? What going forward? Do I want to stay in development? Would I like to look back into grant making? Because that was the role I was in prior to development. Well, sandwich in the middle. And I just was looking in the nonprofit arena for what jobs were available out there in our area. And I came across this Batten disease, and I'd never heard of it before. So I read the job description, but it was an executive director position. I really didn't want to apply for executive director. I always joke, who wants 13 bosses, right? It wasn't me. And so I read the whole job description, though, and I had never heard of Batten disease before. And I thought, well, what is that? So immediately went to the website, read everything I could, then became fascinated with it, started searching the web. Then I went and looked at the 990 and the annual reports and did a little more discovery. And then I thought, what the heck? So I threw my name in the hat. The funny story is, it was literally a year ago at this time that I was interviewing for this job. And so I just realized that I had my first job interview with members of the board, and then I got COVID and spent a week in bed. And then it just so happened that the next week was when my second interview was, and I was finally feeling better. And January 11th, I was working here full time.
Wow.
Yeah.
that was a crazy, crazy experience.
Well, it really was.
I'm glad you're healthy now. I'm glad you
thank
ready
you.
To COVID.
Yeah, I'm vaccinated and boosted, so I feel I feel very safe.
Perfect. Well, let's talk about Batten disease, because like you, I had to do some research, and I was a bit stunned by what I was reading. First, you know, I didn't realize that 1 in 100,000 people worldwide are affected with this disease. And as I understand, it's a fatal genetic disorder. So can you tell us more about Batten disease and maybe give us some insight into the symptoms? Because it's a very, I mean, the symptoms are horrible as you read more and more about this.
It is. It's a horrific disease. And I have, the more I've reflected on it, realized it's a silent killer. It sneaks up on you. Typically, children present with seizures first, and that's the first telltale sign that parents will have. And, you know, like any parents, they would probably contact their pediatrician. And most oftentimes, if it's never happened before, a pediatrician might lob it up to it could be a febrile seizure. It may never happen again. Nothing to see here. Move on. But then eventually there's another seizure. That's usually how the disease begins. But the other sneaky thing about Batten disease is that there are literally 13 different types. So they don't all look and present the same at the same ages through the childhood progression. So some children, depending on CLN type, might not have any seizures that parents witness, but they might start regressing and their motor skills might be going backwards or not developing quite as quickly as would be expected. So that's another sign. And then later, children who might be school age even often develop a vision problem. And a lot of times teachers will even notice the vision problem. And so that will send them down the trajectory of a diagnosis. And oftentimes then it's the first child, right? It's typically the first child that's diagnosed. And then if there are younger ones to be tested, that's when the family finds out where do the genes lie. Regardless of what type, the trajectory is the same, right? So eventually vision is lost. Eventually all motor skills are lost. Eventually speech is lost. Eventually seizures become very prevalent. And there is no cure for any of the 13 versions. And there is currently only one approved treatment, and that's for CLN2.
I wanted to dig in a little bit more on the diagnosis because you talked about, you know, it's often could be confused with other things early on. When do you realize, okay, this could be a diagnosis of Batten disease? How often is it really confused? Does it take these families? Do they have to keep pushing for a diagnosis? Part of what we have talked about previously in our podcast is how difficult it is. You need a physician champion to help you go through the system to find out what's really wrong with your child. Are you seeing that with families who have children suffering from Batten disease as well?
Yes, Becky. So I will say, like any other rare disease in the rare disease community, and I'm a rare patient myself with a 7-year journey toward diagnosis, I think that the average for rare disease is 5. So that's not far off the mark. When you look at where our children diagnoses are, it's usually where it's a larger community and there's a large children's hospital and you have specialists or pediatricians who maybe have had more varied experience in their career to witness this. But if you think about how rare the disease is, and then you determine how many doctors will have the opportunity to see this disease in their lifetime, you can't fault the pediatricians, right? They don't know all things about everything. You can't fault the ophthalmologist. But the reality is, I think that the underserved probably have a bigger problem than those of us who have more access because we generally have a bigger pool to choose from. However, you can be in a community where there's not a single child that's ever had this disease and your pediatrician has never heard of it before and your eye doctor has never heard of it before. And so while it's a horrific experience to go through, I spoke with one mother who took 8 years for her daughter's journey toward diagnosis. And I kept apologizing to her, to the mom, and she kept saying, as long as I didn't know what it was, Amy, I had hope. When I got the disease diagnosis and we knew what was going to happen, that's when I lost my hope. Now, this has been many years ago, and there weren't nearly as many people in the field now trying to find a cure. And that's what's exciting about today, is that there are so many different researchers and pharmaceutical partners looking into this disease, trying to develop enzyme replacement therapy and gene therapy, and everyone's in a rush to try to help find a cure for this disease. And so there is a lot of hope, I would say, in 2021. And going into 2022 is going to be even more exciting.
Now, that's encouraging. And I think talking with families and foundation members, it's been really interesting to hear how isolating finding out a diagnosis can be for these family members. So knowing that there's hope, that there's a community out there is crucial. So can you talk a little bit about the goals of BDSRA and, you know, a little more about what you're doing to help the families and try to continue to bring hope and community to these people that are suffering?
Yeah, so we like to think of BDSRA as a three-legged stool supporting our Batten families. We can't sit on top of this if we don't have strong legs, three strong legs. One of our biggest pillars of support is family support. We support families in many ways, financially, emotionally, connectedly, bringing families together. And I think, you know, one of the greatest gifts of COVID is learning to do things virtually, right? And so when you have a community as small as ours, virtually is a great way to bring people together. And that's one of the ways that we support our families. We've brought on a lot of virtual programming. Morgan DeBoth is our vice president of support and advocacy, and she's doing a great job of making offerings available to our families for support. But we also have financial support through an equipment exchange where families who have no longer needs for equipment can then gift it to other families who need the equipment. And BDSRA helps support the transportation of that equipment from one family to another. So we have another fund that we manage called For the Journey, and it's specifically designed to bring joy to families who are going through the Batten journey. And we have our Family Support Fund, which can mean anything from helping with electric bills to emergency travel or different needs that our families have that were unexpected. Our other pillar is research, and that can show up in many forms. We attend conferences to learn about the research that's out there and coming so that we can share that back out with our families. We help facilitate focus groups for research with industry partners who engage us to work with the patients directly because oftentimes they're not allowed. We also provide grants out to researchers who are researching in the Batten field. So again, one of our pillars. And then the last pillar is advocacy. And as much as we would like to be the largest voice in the room, we know that the more voices in the room, the more amplified our voice collectively will be for BDSRA and Batten disease. And so we have really taken to working towards empowering our families to advocate for themselves alongside us, whether it's through legislation, whether it's through FDA, whether it's through advocating for your family needs to your doctors. Advocacy takes on a big form, and we want to advocate for our families, but we want also for our families to be able to advocate for themselves. So those are our three legs, and we can't do one without the others.
It's amazing work you're doing. I wanted to focus on the first leg for a moment. So you talk a lot about equipment and financial support and emotional support for the families. Can you give some examples of some of the challenges that these families face outside just financial? I'm sure just trying to find time and the impact of Batten on these families that they are facing.
There's so many pieces to this puzzle, right?
Yes.
I mean, even if you just start with the concern that you have as a parent who doesn't have a diagnosis, you don't know what's wrong with your child. Let's say you even get fast tracked and within a year you have a diagnosis, then you begin the grieving process immediately. You're grieving what is inevitable to happen, the grief. So you have grief of what's going to happen and how that grief is going to impact your life. So our families are dealing with a lot emotionally through the journey. But in addition to, I mean, imagine how often we go to the doctor once a year for a physical. If you have to have your child to a doctor who specializes in epilepsy and a doctor who specializes in vision and a doctor who provides physical therapy or a physical therapist for your child, just even getting to medical appointment, you know, that doesn't even include the co-pays that go along with it, the gas that you have to put in your car. There's a lot there. And if you have other children who haven't been diagnosed, you have the ability to get a genetic test done and find out which, if any, of your other children have it. That's a whole nother step up the ladder of trying to decide, am I ready for that yet or am I not? I don't know that I can climb that mountain yet. And so I think that's one decision, deciding whether or not to tell other family members. People need support through that. Who do we want to tell? If we have this diagnosis, do we want to tell the child? We have families who choose not to tell their children what's happening. I mean, there's so many things to consider in this. And how do we tell the children who don't have the disease? And how do we support our children in our Batten community? We refer to them as unaffected and affected children. So how do we tell our unaffected children that their affected sibling has this disease and is going to progress? These are just some of the pieces, the little pieces of the enormous 1,000+ puzzle. And I would say that outside of our closed Facebook group where families can support one another, we have an annual family conference that brings our families together. And only there, I think, do they experience peer safety because they're with adults who understand what they're feeling. Their children understand what the other children are feeling. It's a chance for them to be together and not have to talk about it because everybody just understands.
Right.
We provide research information there. We provide different family supports, like talking through an IEP with your child's instructor about what's to come in the year. When it's hard to set goals for the end of the year when you know that your child is probably going to regress instead of progress. So how does this happen? What do we write for supports? But there is a place where medical support is provided so that parents can attend. There's sibling activity specific for siblings who are unaffected. And there's child care for those who are affected but need more support and gives the parents a break.
Thank you for sharing, because again, these are things that I think people fail to think about when they're dealing with these families, that they have unaffected children, they have affected children, time away from work, trying to manage all of this. It's just, it's tremendous. So you talked a little bit earlier and just a moment ago about the research. So you'd indicated that there was a lot of research taking place on Batten disease.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about how that's progressing? And is data a challenge there? Because that's the other thing that we hear so often in rare disease, trying to get these patient histories, trying to get enough data to truly use it in a drug development way, in a research way. Are you seeing that same challenge, or is this something that you've been able to make progress against? Talk a little bit about that.
Okay, well, first we'll talk about the exciting arena of research, right? So when I took this job a year ago, everybody kept saying, it's such an exciting time to be in this, in the research arena. It's such an exciting time for industry partners. It's such an exciting time for Batten disease. And I kept thinking, what's exciting about this childhood fatal disease? I'm not seeing it, but I see it now. I mean, even just in my year here, we've had a few different new pharmaceutical partners, or industry partners as referred to them, because they're not all pharmaceutical. But we've had, I would say, at least 3 or 4 new industry partners enter the arena that weren't here before. And that is exciting for our families, because it's not often that you'll see one research group take on multiple types of Batten disease. So some may focus on one specific with one therapy specific. But with the advent of all these new people, they're picking some different CLN types to research. So it's not all CLN2 or CLN3. It's CLN1, CLN5, and CLN7, and CLN8. And we're seeing all this great progression, which is exciting for our families who have even more rare versions of the rare disease, right? The other part that's exciting about this is now more than ever, we've been able to collaborate with our partners around the world, not just as patient advocacy groups, but also the researchers themselves. So this gives a great opportunity to share information. But the reality is, our information is only as good as what we know. So if it hasn't been identified yet, or families haven't self-identified to anyone outside of their doctors, then getting numbers for the research is often a hard thing to do. And in the United States, where sometimes getting through the hoop to get things through trial can be difficult, then those numbers become ever more important. That's why our patient advocacy groups are so important to research, because oftentimes we're the first people that families turn to when they get their diagnosis. And so as best we can keep track of that information, we do. But again, it's only as good as those who have identified themselves to us.
That's encouraging to hear that, number one, you have a lot more interest, but you, to your point, you have more interest, but they're focusing on one of the types. So yeah, you're not just, that is very encouraging news to hear. So yeah, what do you think is in store for BDSRA and Batten disease for 2022 and beyond? What is your vision?
So many things. We are really excited to bring back granting, and we hope to do that in 2022. The reality is COVID really put a clamp on research. PPE was hard to come by. Labs had to do much extra and extensive cleaning protocols that they may or may not have had the supplies to do. It really put a damper on their ability to use different animal models because of that. There's a lot that went into the research behind the scenes that just made it cost prohibitive and people prohibitive to actually facilitate that research. So realistically, research had been on the back burner for the last couple of years because of COVID. So we really hope to bring that back in 2022. Our granting process, our staff is growing to better serve everyone's needs. So we're excited about that. We are looking forward to our first in-person conference in nearly 3 years. It will have been 3 years by the time everybody gets back together. Assuming that Omicron and Delta can keep in check, we know that there's so much death still happening in the world, which is horrible, and we don't want to see it, and we don't want to put our families at risk by any stretch of the imagination. And if this ramps up again, we'll ask our community, like we did last year, whether or not they feel comfortable and safe coming to a conference, and then make the decision. But we really hope we'll be together again in Cleveland in July. This is our 35th anniversary of the birth of our organization. So we have a lot to celebrate in 2022. And we hope to have a big party at the conference. We have Ask an Expert virtual meetings planned out for the entire year at this point. So every month of the year, we will have experts talking about things that are important to our families. And it could be anywhere from research to IEP planning. We have virtual parties that will be hosted once a quarter for our children, and it can be affected or unaffected children, and parents are welcome to join. We actually have a holiday party next week that I'm excited to be a part of. And we received a grant from one of our family foundations called Our Promise to Nicholas. We send out like a party in a box. So all the party supplies will be included in the box. Every party moving forward will include a book. And so Our Promise to Nicholas has funded that for the next year in 2022. Aside from all the conferences that we hope to attend again in person, if not virtually, but the research conferences, the advocacy conferences, Advocating on the Hill again, which we know is going to be virtual, but it worked out great because we got to meet with all of our representatives. So there's a lot to look forward to in 2022.
It sounds that way. So let me congratulate you and say happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the grant. I think that's fantastic.
Thank you.
And I have to say, these virtual parties where you get your party in a box is really kind of fun. It's like, hey, I got a surprise and I get to play on a party. So it's great. I want to pivot for a minute because You are a self-described process improvement advocate and a podcast junkie. So I wanted to ask you, how do you leverage your process improvement and podcasts to build awareness around rare disease and around Batten disease? Are there any best practices, any lessons you've learned in your experience with nonprofit and in rare disease?
So I'm going to back up a little bit in my career back to that marketing director job at the community bank. Our bank president used to say all the time at our leadership meetings, you are my hired experts. I trust you to tell me what's best for your area. And in the end of the day, I'm the bank president. It's my job to make the decisions. But I count on all of you to be the expert in your field and give me your best advice. And that's always stuck with me. And I think that the only way you can improve any processes is if you treat your colleagues on your team as the expert in their field to bring you their best advice. It doesn't work well when someone is telling another one how to do their job if they've never done that job. And I think process improvement only comes out of expecting the best out of your colleagues and knowing that they're going to come back to you constantly with better ways to do things. There's a sign on my wall right over here beside me that says, if not now, when? And that's really how I feel about it. If we don't fix it now, when will we have time to go back and make it right? We need to figure out how to do it better the first time so that moving forward, it's the way we want it to be until we find a better way. But I think that's really always a moving target. And I think in the nonprofit arena, because the nonprofit arena is chronically understaffed to the epidemic proportions, many organizations are trying to do multiple things with few people. And so they do things the way they always did it because that's how the person before them taught them. Maybe. Because maybe the person before them didn't work there anymore, so they had to figure out how to do it themselves. And when I worked in granting, I saw this over and over and over again. And so I think in the nonprofit arena, we need to make sure that we have adequate staffing and stop bragging about how little we pay our people and how few staff we have. We are a business like any other business. And in order to operate a nonprofit well and to serve our families well and serve our mission well, then we need to have a staff who can adequately serve those people and not be beleaguered by trying to do multiple things at once. Process improvement only comes from having those who are adequately staffed and happy to be working where they're working. And so I think that's a really easy transition into the nonprofit world with process improvement. As far as being a podcast junkie, I will admit that I never heard of them. I didn't know how to use my Apple phone when I first got it. And my sister and her best friend turned me on to this podcast called Serial, which everyone in the world has heard of by now. But I couldn't believe what I was listening to. And then the three of us couldn't stop talking about it. And I think I got in on it late. So I was binge listening to catch up. And today I don't just listen to true crime, but I listen to the news every morning. I get, you know, my little fix for 15 or 20 minutes. I listen to politics at night. I listen to different podcasts about women leadership, podcasts about nonprofit leadership. And then upon entering this community and also discovering, hey, I'm a rare patient too, and I didn't know there was this whole world of rare out there, I had now listened to a lot of podcasts about rare disease.
I was going to ask you about that. So that, again, when we started this series, we talked a lot about social media and, you know, building these platforms to build communities, but we started discovering that podcasts are a way of building the community. So it's interesting to hear that you, as a disease patient, also found a community. And is there anything you would say that we need to do more of, or that you think are also community builders that might be interesting for people out there? Is there anything else you could?
Well, I would say that early on, we took the opportunity with some staffing changes to hire a marketing person on our team. And I think that's been a very important investment for our rare community, because the social media is the only way that our rare community can stay connected. So we need to use all platforms, you know, whether it's Twitter or a podcast, we need it. in all the places so that our community feels connected to our organization. I will tell you, podcasts are on our wish list. We hope to have one day too. And in fact, one of the ones I was listening to this morning, which I think is Once Upon a Gene, is I didn't ever catch this before, but I believe that it said it was put together by Bloodstream Media. And I thought, what a clever name for a rare podcast. And this is their platform for hosting rare diseases. And so, you know, I think the marketing person in me will always be in my heart and will always be looking for ways to get our message out. And I think podcasts is one of the key ways. So any way we can promote what we're doing will only further add to the awareness of our disease, which will help create donors for us and help support our families who really need to know that they're not in this alone.
Exactly. Well, we had the pleasure of interviewing Effie Parks, who does that podcast. So yeah, she's amazing what she's done with her whole marketing and getting word out. So we are coming to the end of our podcast, I'm sorry to say, but how would families get in touch with you? If there are people that believe they have Batten disease in their family, or they're struggling for a diagnosis and they just need an encouraging word, how do they get in touch with you and what would you suggest to them?
There are so many opportunities to get in touch with us. It would be hard to miss us. Certainly if you Google Batten Disease Support and Research Association, you're going to find us and all of our tools. But our website is bdsra.org. So that's literally our initials. You can call us at any time. Our phone numbers are all on our website as well. And you can call each teammate individually. You can go to any one of our social media pages. We're on all the platforms. Literally LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and our handles at BDSRA. You can check out our newsletter, which is also available on our website. If you go to our homepage and go to news, we have a monthly newsletter and it's as easy as clicking the link and signing up. Did I say it's electronic? It's electronic. So you just sign up with your email. We have all the things in there. You can sign up for events. You can read about the latest research. And you can find out ways to participate in advocacy. One of the things that we've launched is a Toolbox Tuesday, which is our advocacy toolkit. So if you follow any of our social media, you'll find ways to advocate every Tuesday. We have stories on Instagram and Facebook typically, and we have what's called a link tree, which gives you all the things in one place. So for me, the easiest place to find the link tree is go to Instagram. There's always an opportunity on there. Audrey Albright is our marketing person, and she makes sure that there's always an opportunity to find a link tree somewhere so that you can have all the things in one place. And if you want to donate, there's a big yellow donate button on our homepage as well. This is our annual appeal time, and we're coming into that year-end gifts as well. And so we've been laying the groundwork for that, telling our story since November, creating our case for support.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you again for joining us. Listeners, know how to find the page. All of the information is there. So I would encourage anyone that is struggling to reach out to Amy. Amy, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Becky, thank you so much for taking the time to shine a light on Batten disease and to give BDSRA the opportunity to talk about it for our families. We are grateful for the love that they share with us. We are grateful for the research that is commencing around the world.
Yes.
And we are grateful for the opportunity to advocate and to be listened to. So you have helped us tremendously just by putting us on this podcast.
I appreciate that. And again, I'm excited about the work you're doing and so glad to hear that there's more and more research out there and there's finally some hope that can be given to these families. So that's wonderful to hear. And I hope you have a happy holiday season. And again, thanks so much for joining.
Thank you so much, Becky.
Okay, that wraps it up for this week. If you enjoyed this podcast or have suggestions for future episodes and how we can make it better, please get in touch with us. You can email us at fewandfarbetween@biorossi.com or contact us on our website at biorossi.com. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again.